Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Many factors contribute to recidivism in Ohio's prisons. That is, the number of released inmates who return to prison for parole violations and or additional crimes. Employment, housing, and transportation all have a hand in whether someone manages to stay out. Still, Ohio's recidivism rate is just over 27% compared to 40% for the nation. Not bad. In this next installment of our series on mass incarceration in Ohio, we look at what's working and what could be working better when it comes to keeping inmates on the outside. Joining us now is Marion Correctional Institution Warden Jason Bunting. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Oh, hey, morning. Thank you for having me.
First of all, let's get started with Marion Correctional Institution's recidivism rate. When I was at Marion Correctional recently for the TEDx event,
right.
And by the way, listeners, you can learn more about that. There is a Facebook page devoted to it. You didn't speak at the TEDx event formally, but you did have some words to say, and one of them had to do with your recidivism rate.
Right. Yeah, I actually mentioned the agency's recidivism rate, and you alluded to it. It's 27.1, and actually the national average is closer to 50%.
Okay.
It's 49.7, to be exact. But they have, our research division has released some preliminary data based on level two prisons, which we are, the lower security kind of prisons. And they talk about, you know, men and women routinely don't stay at the same prison over their time. They move to other prisons. But they talk about, for our institution, men that were released from our prison that did about 85% of their time, our recidivism rate is actually lower than our state's. It's 23.6.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you went down to that they spent 70% of their time at our prison, then it goes to 23.8. So some positive results, obviously, even below the Ohio's 27.1%.
You come from the social worker background.
I do.
Which is unusual.
Yeah, unusual for traditional wardens, I would say, and I hate to say that, but not unusual for our building, because Chris Money, who started kind of a transformation at our place, and always have to give her credit, in 1996, she came to Marion, she hired me in 97, she's a social worker. The next person that replaced her, Maggie Beatler, not necessarily a social worker, but sure had a lot of those traits, was a mentee of Chris and my mentor. And so it's almost been three generations of the same. We often talk about this, three generations of the same leadership, similar philosophies. We've just tweaked how we approach it. You know, I'm a techie kind of guy. I've looked at those kind of things, and, you know, I see the world evolving. And when you're spending, when men are spending 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and they need to know that you're going to go to Myers and you can check out without ever talking to a human. You know what I mean? Those kind of things. So it's important for them to learn the technology piece. And I think that's one of the things I've really tried to strive moving our prison towards. But philosophically, you know, three social workers that have been, I guess, in charge, I hate to say that, of the mission and vision of the prison. That's pretty unique.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're continuing our series on mass incarceration. Today we're looking at the issue of recidivism, that is, the rate at which inmates return to prison after they've been released. My guest right now, Jason Bunting, he's warden at the Marion Correctional Institution. If you have a question or comment for Jason Bunting, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So you talked about how you should generally share the philosophy of your two predecessors,
mm-hmm.
one of whom was a social worker, one of whom was not, but did embrace it,
right.
Largely. What's the difference? What is the philosophy?
I think it's a whole mixture of things. So if I can just speak freely,
sure.
It's instilling hope in folks, and that's not necessarily just the inmate population. That's with the staff. It's being creative, trying to find ways to give folks autonomy within reason, obviously, give them opportunity to master things, and then honestly give them a purpose. Now, again, that's just not the inmate population. That's the staff as well. And I have to give them kudos, because we have a great many staff that fill traditional roles. I'm an officer, I'm a sergeant, I'm the warden, I'm the deputy, I'm this, I'm that, but do all these other great things and bring all these other creative ideas. So when you have, you know, a sergeant that does a Bible study on their own time, not on state time, clocks mm-hmm. out, comes in and does a Bible study, volunteers. Or you have somebody that has an interest in wildlife program and helps with that supervision, that's an officer. Or you got a case manager that does something outside of being a case manager, their traditional roles, that impacts the mission and vision of the place. I mean, it really does. And so it's really a credit to folks wanting to create an environment that's safe for them, decent place for them to work at. Always know at the end of the day they can go home, and I think the majority of our folks have bought into that, hey, not a bad place to work, pretty safe, and I'm going to go home and come back and do it again tomorrow. So, and the men the same way, pretty decent place, not perfect, pretty decent place to do time, can get some autonomy, ability to master something, some purpose, and guess what? I lay my head on the bed at night, I'm going to wake up tomorrow, I'm going to be safe, and I'm still working towards going towards a release. So those are some of the things that come to mind. You know, we try to do a holistic approach. You know, if you get a certification in barber school, that's just not enough. You got to do all the other stuff. You know, what else do you have issues with? Do you have substance abuse issues? Do you have anger management issues? You know, the certification works, but the reality of it is if you don't have all that other stuff in order as well, you're going to struggle with applying that certification upon release.
Attitude is important once you get out, but reality is inmates or former felons are prohibited from doing all kinds of things mm-hmm. now in society. They're depending on what their crime was, they're prohibited in living in certain places.
Right.
How do you I find I ask the same question of the military when we're talking about people leaving the military, veterans and so forth. How do you prepare them? And the military kind of says, well, you really can't.
Mm-hmm.
How do you and can you?
We talked earlier before we came on the air. I think it's really, you know, I told you there's three factors that we really track in our agency, and it's about don't get yourself embedded in the criminal justice system for us guys. Don't do that. The deeper you go, the less likely you're going to come out of it. But I think the two things that are most important that we really research and track are associates and their attitude. Associates, you got to get them to buy into that some of the folks you're hanging out with are going to bring you right back to this spot. So somehow you have to break that cycle, or we have a responsibility to connect them with folks that are positive influences that are going to be out on the streets to receive them, walk them through that first year or that second year or that third year. You're going to have Naj on the show later, and, you know, and he'll talk about kind of his transition. But, you know, it's important for folks to be there that are positive, different associates. So that's one thing we strive to do with our men. The other thing is their attitude, and that's a choice. You know, either you like being a criminal and what comes with it, or I hate to say this, you hate it so much that it's got to be something better. And so you got to change your attitude. Don't be mad at me. Change your attitude. And so those kind of things through pro-social kind of activities and just meaningful activities for men, those are the kind of things that you want to have at your prison that really hopefully impacts those three things.
To what extent is this emphasis on all of these issues that play into the recidivism rate a top-down issue in the state of Ohio?
Have you ever met Gary Moore?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty passionate guy. I kind of, when I have interactions with him, I usually tell him I'll do anything for you. And that's just kind of how he has approached. You know, he has introduced that, hey, we got to get these guys busy, these men and women.
Uh-huh.
I hate to say only men.
Mostly
yeah.
guys,
yeah.
though, still.
Yeah. Get them busy. Get them in meaningful activities, put them in appropriate leadership roles, let them be a part of the solution, those kind of things. One of the things that's most unique about him is he changed our mission and vision.
Okay.
Used to be that you couldn't even recite, I couldn't have recite the mission and the vision because it was so long. And so now what is most important to me, it's all important, but most significant for me, and I talk to folks about, is the vision. It says reduce crime in Ohio. That's what he's telling us to do. I think everybody should really understand that's what a shift that is, because think about it. You think about reducing crime, you bring people to prison, that's fighting crime. What that vision really says is you people working in corrections in these buildings with these men or these women, you're responsible for driving down the crime rate. And what you do with them and how successful they are and coming out and not recommitting adds to that vision. So really, we're inside now part of reducing crime. And it became so clear to me when he rolled that out that, wow, we're part of a bigger picture. I mean, it's not about who we get, it's about who we're sending out.
There's been, over the past 25 years, a sense of a lot of people who follow the criminal justice system or the correction system in Ohio call it the correction systems. They don't call it anymore rehabilitation and corrections. That's the formal name.
Right.
But the idea of rehabilitation kind of went by the wayside for a long time.
Right.
It was three strikes and you're out. Truth in sentencing, it was about punishment and not about rehabilitation.
Right. Well, I think you said it actually when you I have something for you before I leave. When you called me the phys ed teacher the last time
he
you
came. He looks like a phys ed teacher, folks.
And actually, look, I brought you a whistle in case for yourself, in case I bomb and I have a new job, I need to be a phys ed teacher.
Cool.
But, you know, we're one of the only states that keep rehabilitation in our title, but you talked about restored citizens, I think is what you alluded to. And I think that's a much better term. But when the director is very clear, my boss is very clear, we're not just doing corrections. Yes, we got to keep people safe and secure. Yes, there are people that may unfortunately have to be with us for the duration of their lives. But at the end of the day, you also have to take care of people. You have to restore them. They have to be restored because they're coming out more often than not. Like we said at TEDx, you know, we're talking about the community believes that 70% of folks are coming back to prison, not that 72% of folks are coming to live in your neighborhood, to work in your community, to be a part of your community. And if that's the case, then they better come out restored or rehabilitated.
A lot in this series, we've talked about the issue of the old law and new law.
Right.
And when I visited Marion Correctional a few weeks ago for the TEDx event, I talked with inmates, former inmates, some of whom were out early in just a matter of a few years because of the new law, sitting, you know, elbow to elbow with guys who are going to be in there for another 20 years, who've already been there 20 years under the old law.
Right.
What is the dynamic when it comes to the guys that are getting out versus the guys that are going to be there maybe for the rest of their lives or for most of their lives?
And their relationship with one another?
And how that affects getting their attitude.
Well, I think one of the things is that we focus on is we have 535 men serving life sentences, another 40 men serving life without parole in Marion.
Okay.
So you think about it, there's 600 men, give or take, that day for day are going to be in prison every 10, 15, 20, 25. And I hate to say that. I'm very respectful to our convicts, but are going to be with us for a while. So we have to give them the tools to be able to manage that. And one of the things we rely on is our guys that have serving a lot of time. We rely on them to go mentor the guys that were them. You know, they started at 18. Well, guess what? This 18-year-old and this 19 and this 20-year-old that just came to prison that's maybe only going to do 2 years or a year or 5 years or whatever, hey, we need you to take him and show him the ropes, involve him in the programs that made a difference to you. And so we do a lot of informal mentoring. We give our long-term offenders some autonomy and some skills appropriately to mentor other folks. And they have really taken it all upon themselves to say, hey, these are people that were me when I came to prison, but I came to prison and I started at Lucasville, and no offense there, or I started at a higher security, and now this 18-year-old gets a chance at a lower security to experience all these privileges. So let's show him what that means and how that looks and what a benefit that's going to be for him. Instead, I had to work to it. He gets it from almost gets it from the jump street. Mm-hmm. And then, so we do a lot of that. So our average age for a long time was over 44. It's now at about 40. And we've had some blips on the radar with the, you know, when you're going to sway a population as far as the average age that way. But honestly, we got a lot of good young men that are doing good stuff too, more often than not.
It sounds like you're giving the long-term inmates, the long-term residents there purpose.
Right.
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 Just one more question. What do you think is the important factors that go into success outside?
Actually, our inmates tell us. So it'd be easier just to tell me that. We're responsible to do an annual needs assessment in our prison.
Okay.
And one of the things we always ask, we do a survey of the inmate population, a ratio of the inmate population, and they tell us the top five things they need. So, and you mentioned them early. It's things like family, house or shelter, clothing, food, and in some instance, counseling or treatment. But those typically are the top five things, a job, employment, obviously. Mm-hmm. Those are the top five or six things almost every year that we've been doing that assessment that I've been at that prison.
Is that stuff they need but don't have, or is that stuff they just know will help make them successful? Or both?
Probably a combination of both. And from some cases, we talk about the long-term offender. It's stuff they just don't know how to get anymore. Mm-hmm. So when you've been out of the community for so long, you got to have somebody to be able to show them, how do you get that job? Where do you go for housing? Where am I going to get clothing? Those kind of things. And for others that, you know, spend a brief time with us, it's about giving them the skill set to know that they can get those things and keep those things in a legitimate manner, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Jason Bunting, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the whistle.
You're welcome.
I don't think I'm worthy of it, however. Jason Bunting, he's warden at the Marion Correctional Institution. Coming up, we're going to look at how inmates are assessed for likelihood of return when it comes to parole. That's one of the factors that goes into the parole decision. You will be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the relationship between mass incarceration and recidivism. That is the rate at which prison inmates return to prison. In Ohio, the rate was, in Ohio, the rate was just over 27% in 2010. Nationally, the rate of recidivism is about 40% or 50%. Part of the equation is a means by which we assess inmates for parole. And one of the parole board's tools in Ohio is the Ohio Risk Assessment System. Joining us now by phone from Cincinnati is one of the creators of the Ohio Risk Assessment System. He's director of the University of Cincinnati School of Criminal Justice, Dr. Edward Latessa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Why is this software needed?
Well, assessment of risk has been around for a long time, and we had done a couple studies in Ohio, some fairly large studies looking at men and women coming out of prison, and it was very clear that we needed to do a better job of assessing their risk. We know, for example, if we over-program low-risk folks, we can actually increase their recidivism rates, and we really want to target the higher risk offenders with our most intensive programs. We want to make sure that they're getting what they need so that when they do come out of prison, they have a chance at being successful.
So it isn't just about at the parole point, it's at the point of entry to the prison?
Well, what we did here in Ohio was a little bit different. There are a lot of assessment tools that have been available for a long time, but my work had really told me that you needed to look at different points in the system because risk factors can change. And so what we did was we actually went out and collected data on, I think, about 2,000 offenders here in Ohio. We looked at people at every level of the system. So we assessed people that were on probation. We assessed people that were coming into prison. We assessed people that were leaving prison. And from all of those assessments and data, we'd actually developed a number of tools. The Ohio Risk Assessment System is exactly that. It's a system. So we have a community supervision tool. We have a prison intake tool. We have a prison reentry tool. And so depending on where that individual is, their risk can be assessed. For example, someone who's been in prison for 5 or 10 years, there are a number of risk factors that might be common if they're in the community. They're really no longer present because they've been incarcerated.
Such as what? Can you
give well, who you hang around with. Hmm. You know, I mean, in prison, you don't have as much choice. Your job. You know, whether you've been gainfully employed in prison, it's a very kind of contrived setting. Mm-hmm. A lot of risk factors are essentially held constant. So when we looked at men and women who had been in prison for at least 2 years, we actually found only three very important domains: their criminal history, their social support systems, and their behavioral patterns, their personality, and their criminal attitudes. Everything else kind of disappeared. But when they come out again, once they're out in the community, now you start to see those other risk factors come into play, such as substance use and employment and so forth. So our system actually allows the state to assess people depending on where they're at.
I've heard a lot. The main criticism I've heard about the system is the reliance and the emphasis on criminal history, that somebody who's been in prison for 20 years is being judged. Not to suggest that there shouldn't be any reference to it when they've said this, but that I'm a different person than I was 20 years ago when I committed that crime while I was high on drugs, or whatever the motivation was, and that there's too much of an emphasis. How do you weight the criminal history issue?
Well, we actually here in the assessment tools that we develop, we're really big on what we call dynamic risk factors. Criminal history is a very strong predictor, but you can't change those scores. In other words, if you have a long history, you'll always have a long history. And so when you look, for example, at the reentry tool, it actually has 8 items with regard to criminal history, and it has 8 items with regard to their criminal attitudes and their behavioral patterns. Mm-hmm. So, because what the research shows is that attitudes and values and beliefs are one of the strongest predictors of criminal behavior. If you think what you did was, not a problem, if you believe that your problems are due to other people, you think that it's okay to get over on others, then that's a very good predictor you're going to continue that behavior. Criminal history always shows up as a strong risk factor because the past is always a strong predictor of the future.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're continuing our series on mass incarceration in Ohio. My guest right now is Dr. Edward Latessa. He's one of the creators of the Ohio Risk Assessment System. He's director of the University of Cincinnati School of Criminal Justice. If you have a question or comment about the risk assessment system in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What about bad test takers, if that makes sense? Even oral test takers, they just don't test well. Is there any function in the system that takes into account somebody who doesn't express themselves well verbally or orally, I should say, that sort of thing?
Well, the way these assessment the way our protocol works is it's actually a structured interview. The combination of things. One, of course, is the assessor would look at the record, look at the official data, and then they conduct a structured interview with the individual. And so they have a series of questions that they ask them. It's really not contingent on how well they can communicate. It's really contingent on whether these attributes are still present or not. So it's not a test like we would think of a test you might take in school. It's really a process where the assessor gathers the information, we have indicators and criteria, and they score it. The automation is just a way to store the data and to produce the reports. The real foundation of this assessment is a structured interview process that's then put into the computer simply to give them a score.
How does the system change as laws change, or does it not?
Well, risk factors don't really change necessarily. Risk factors and risk factors are fairly, the research is pretty clear. There are some major what we call major sets of risk factors that really cut across jurisdictions, they cut across individuals, they cut across race and ethnicity and gender. And so most of the today's assessment tools try to tap these areas. For example, if you hang around with people that get into trouble all the time, that have criminal records, that's a risk factor.
You mean in prison?
Well, in or out of prison.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
And so it doesn't really matter if you're, you know, if what your sentence is, it doesn't matter if you're black or white. I mean, that's a risk factor. That's
mm-hmm.
why all mothers worry about who their children hang around with.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you blame others, you know, if you don't accept responsibility, that can be a risk factor. Right. That
mm-hmm.
means you feel like it's OK to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a risk factor, again, whether you're, you know, been in prison a long time, whether you're just coming in, whether you're in the community. These are the kind of things, lack of self-control. You know, a lot of offenders are impulsive. They act without thinking, right? And so again, that cuts across types of offense and sentences and laws. That really has very little to do with it.
How much training goes into using this assessment tool?
I believe in Ohio, the way the process works is, I think it's a 2-day full training. The assessors then have to pass a test, so they have to be certified to use the tool. I think there's a recertification process built in, so I think every 3 years they have to be recertified. If they don't pass, they have to go back through training again. We've trained trainers here in Ohio, and so there's a core of trainers that ODRC and many of the probation and parole districts have. So they then are responsible for training all the staff and making sure it's done correctly. We have done some recent studies on the system, on the tools. They've held up very well. Reliability is always a concern,
mm-hmm.
and so we want to make sure that if, you know, you're assessing and I'm assessing the same person, that we come to the same score. And so we have a way to look at reliability to make sure that that's being done well. And when items fall below our threshold, we will go back in and either make sure we're wording the questions correctly, or there may call for retraining.
Who actually are the assessors? Are they the members of the parole board, or are they someone who works for the parole board? In the case of the parole piece of the system.
I believe they use case managers in the Ohio system as the assessors. They have a fairly large network of case managers. In a probation department, it's a probation officer and parole. You know, obviously it can be parole officers. But I believe in the ODRC's facilities, it's case managers.
And how does Ohio stack up nationally? Do most other states use some kind of risk assessment system?
I think most states at different levels use assessment systems. What's interesting about the ORAS, it's now being used in Indiana. Texas is about to adopt it. Colorado, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, Alabama, Arkansas, some counties in California, and so it's getting a lot of adoptions. It's a non-proprietary system, so the actual assessments they can use for free. They have to be trained, and so a number of states have looked at Ohio because they really like the fact that this is a very versatile system that allows them to look at people rather than use one tool to look at them wherever they're at. This has multiple tools that are really customized for the setting.
Mary in Columbus, you're on the air with Dr. Edward Latessa. He's one of the creators of the Ohio Risk Assessment System. Hi, Mary.
Oh, yes. Look, I wanted to ask a question.
Sure.
When Dr. Latessa was talking about, I was a clinical director at Halfway House in 2010, and when we first received the ORAS, the Ohio Recidivism, you know, Assessment Screen, it was my understanding that there were some problems with the initial screen, and the data that they would get from using that screen was not going to be entirely accurate. They were in the process of revising it, And I was wondering if the figures that he has for the recidivism, or I cannot say that word, but anyway, if those are based on the 2010 screening instruments that they distributed to everybody, the halfway houses. The other thing was when he mentioned the problem that I saw with this screening instrument is even though it's supposed to be on the inmate or the client's self-report, you know, you talk to them, okay, what, you know, what was your history, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of problems with the money with the state, we did not receive their criminal background. So a lot of times it was just based on what they said because we didn't have the documents or paper history that would be with them. So that's what, you know, I'm just wondering if they revised it since that time.
Okay. Thanks, Mary. Dr. Latessa?
Yes. Well, the first question is, I believe it was around the screener. For those, what we did, because the longest tool in the system is the dispositional tool, the tool that's used when someone's been found guilty and a court is probation department or a court is assessing them as part of the pre-sentence process. And that's a fairly long instrument, and so they wanted us to create a screener that would allow them to kind of quickly identify lower risk offenders so that they did not have to spend as much time on the full assessment. And so that tool was never really meant to be an assessment, a full assessment tool. It's really just a handful of items that were found to allow the system to kind of screen out very low-end people. People didn't have long criminal histories and really were, you know, were employed and so forth. So there was never any intent that tool would be serve as a kind of full assessment. The question around not having access to the criminal records, you know, that's clearly a problem in a setting like a halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we strongly recommend that information be shared either by the state or by the court, depending on who's making the referral, because, you know, the assessment's only as good as the information you have. And so, you know, the assessor has to should be verifying information, especially around criminal history and employment and so forth. There are some questions. We do have a self-report, some items that can be self-reported that are fairly, you know, how many children do you have and are you married and where do you live? But that's optional. The assessor can do the full assessment if they choose to do it. But in any kind of interview-based assessment, you've got to make sure the information you're getting is accurate.
Thanks, Mary, for that call. And then a real quick one from Edwin. We're running out of time, but Edwin, I wanted to squeeze you in. Hi.
Hi there. Good morning, Ann and Ed. I worked with Ed a long time ago at Youth Services on their risk assessment. My question is really about the last week when you talked to the chairman of the parole board,
right.
Sounded like they don't really use very much data, especially from the risk assessments. They more or less go by what I would call a gut feeling or a reaction based a lot on criminal history. How do we get the parole board to use more data-driven instruments rather than the traditional method?
Well, Edward Latessa, do you know to what extent the parole board embraces this or should embrace it?
Well, that's a great question, and good to hear from you, Ed. You know, this is one piece of information that it goes into should go into the decision making. These assessment tools aren't foolproof. You know, they're based on probabilities. Parole boards have to consider a lot of factors, but this is the most scientific way we know to bring together lots of information to make a pretty good prediction of where this individual falls in terms of categories of risk. In our data, people that scored high risk had a 60 or 70% chance of recidivating, and people that were low risk had only a 20% chance of recidivating. There's no amount of information that the parole board can look at individually that's going to give them that ability to sort with that kind of accuracy. So, you know, again, it is a tool. It's not meant to replace parole board discretion. They have to look at other factors as well, including what that offender did and how long they've been in prison and so forth. But these tools, we've known for a long time that these tools are much more accurate than simply professional judgment or some kind of clinical assessment.
Edward Latessa, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Edward Latessa, he's one of the creators of the Ohio Risk Assessment System. He's also director of the University of Cincinnati School of Criminal Justice. Coming up, we continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. This is the latest installment in our series on mass incarceration in Ohio. Today, we're talking about the issue of recidivism, that is the rate at which prison inmates return to prison. In Ohio, the rate was just over 27% in 2010. Nationally, the rate is in excess of 40%. A job and a home and real connections to the community are considered critical. But those don't come easy for many, and without them, a sense of hopelessness can set in. There are programs for that. Joining us now is the president of the Horizon Prison Initiative, C. Joseph Sprague. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also joining us is the program manager for Win-Win, Inc. That's an organization that focuses on successful prisoner reentry. Najmuddin Salam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Bishop Sprague, how has the Horizon Prison Initiative impacted recidivism in the state? How do you measure?
Well, we track our graduates who are released over 15 years. We're at 9%. The last 5 years, under 4%. So clearly, it's a program that works because it transforms inmates who transform first the prison and then the community. So when they leave prison, they are human beings ready to be transforming agents.
It starts in the prison, then?
Very much so.
Does it continue after prison?
Only in the sense that we have an informal network, one with another. It's a community inside three of the Ohio prisons. This is our 15th year at Marion, our fifth year at Chillicothe, and our third year at London. 200 men per year. It's an academic year cycle. Our men live in family units, multi-faith, multi-racial, multi-everything. They learn to live in family, as family, deal with conflict, trauma, all of the things that help to bring them to prison.
Do they have to apply?
They apply, and there are many more men who apply each year than we can receive. The numbers determined by the beds available, because our men live in open dormitory. There are no bars that separate them from one another. Mm-hmm. And so the number of beds that each institution provides for us is the number we can handle.
Now, you operate in multiple prisons.
Three prisons.
Three prisons. Where did you start at Marion?
Oh, we started at Marion. This is our 15th year.
And not a coincidence, Marion is one of the more progressive prisons.
It's interesting. In the 80s, the decade of the 80s, I was a pastor for 10 years in Marion itself, mm-hmm. and would visit that prison often. It was a hellhole. Mm-hmm. I would leave there dysfunctional, either angry or depressed. After the Horizon Initiative went there in large measure because of Warden Christine Money, who invited us in, mm-hmm. Those who were involved began to see a change. By this time, I was in Chicago as the bishop there, and the person who had taken the program to Marion kept saying, come and see, Joe, come and see, come and see. And I did. And it was the difference between the desert and an oasis. It wasn't just Horizon, but as Christine and others have said, Horizon has been the leader of the band. And this gentleman is a graduate of Horizon.
Right. Najmuddin Salam, welcome to the show, too.
Thank you, Dean.
You're the program manager for Win-Win. That focuses on successful prison reentry as well. It also starts in the prison.
Correct.
It has to start in the prison, right?
Correct.
You can't just wait until you get out.
No.
Which used to be the way it was.
Right. Well, that's one of the problems with the system now. You have to wait until you're 5 years out before you can get into some of the key programs. And for long-term guys, that's a real problem.
Tell us about Win-Win.
Win-Win has space inside Marion Correctional Institution.
As well.
It's called the Lifeline Reentry Community Center. We provide programming that ranges from communication skills, active listening, mediation, Spanish, French, Arabic. My mentoring program, HOPE, Helping Ourselves Pursue Excellence, GPS, Growth Potential and Self-Awareness. More than anything, I want to point out, it's not just the programming.
That's right.
It's the people.
Right.
You have to have a certain culture that brings about the opportunity for people to learn and to be empowered. Programming is not just it, but more so what you put into the programming and the opportunity.
One thing I want to point out is these are not state programs, right?
No.
They are not, no. For example, in our program, each man in our program has an outside brother who is an absolute volunteer. For 11 months, that outside brother goes every Tuesday night to spend 2 hours in conversation with his inside brother. Lifeline operates with a similar kind of modality. It's about community. It's about community transforming community.
That's a key piece that reminds me going back to Horizon.
When you were in it.
Yeah, yep. When I was in Horizon.
At Marion, right?
Correct. Yep. And of course, you know Joe D, my mentor personally. Mm-hmm. That the relationship that goes from that environment and that stretches outside of that environment, that's kind of the critical piece where people have support to where the things that you don't know, you get to see someone model that behavior and kind of walk with you through that journey inside and then outside, which led to employment, TEDx Marion Correctional, and, you know, and all the different things, me continuing my education, just all the different factors that can make you successful once you've been exposed to that system or touched by the justice system.
Some people might say, this is what the prison system should be doing anyway. Do you think the prison system, Joe Sprague, could do it?
No. But it could be much more helpful to those of us who can.
Okay. I say no. You think the outsideness of it is
the community
part of what
has to assume responsibility for the problems that the community itself has created. And inside, Naj could say a lot more about this than I, it's difficult for men who are incarcerated, controlled, to trust those who are doing the controlling, whereas those who come because they want to, who volunteer to do that, who feel a sense of calling, come with no agenda except the agenda of transforming love.
That's a good point, Bishop. That's a good point. In my experience and also in other institutions, Marion just has a certain culture, as Warren Bunting said earlier. It was good to see him on the way out.
The phys ed teacher.
Yeah, because, and just on a personal note, I watched that man's career go from a case manager to a unit manager to a deputy warden to a warden. And for me personally, as a young man that was growing up in prison, that was kind of motivational, kind of inspirational.
Well, he said he watched you grow up and you watched him grow up.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He said that not on the air, but beforehand.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so the point about far as the connecting people like that and not understanding what's going on and people are introducing you to new things, that's a powerful piece. I mean, just when you came in for the TEDx, that connectedness and how people are together and you're of value, that's what empowers people, you know, and makes it to where you get the opportunity to do different things, which makes you grow and then which makes you like ready to, you know, once you're released. So you have some skills, you know, in pro-social behaviors and things.
I want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, that you can learn more about the TEDx, Marion Correctional TEDx event. They have a Facebook page.
Yes.
And I think there are links now to some of the talks.
Mm-hmm.
On YouTube. And this is the third year that they had the TEDx event at Marion. It is the first prison in the world to have a TEDx event. And it's pretty cool, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's invitation only, and it's a super cool thing to be able to witness, but you can witness it. That's one of the great things about TED and TEDx is anybody can hear the talks. So I highly encourage people to go there because there's a lot more of this where that came from.
Wow.
If you want to, is there has Horizon changed over 15 years to reflect the changes in the system, the changes in the laws?
Largely, the curriculum is determined by the needs of the men. In fact, a portion of the commitment is actually written by the men themselves. And so as they are able to identify and articulate their needs, programs are shaped accordingly. We have a core curriculum that every participant must take, and then a plethora of electives that they can take. And that core curriculum is always being fine-tuned. What we know, though, is you have to get in touch with your deepest self.
Absolutely.
And to find what's down there. So we have an awakening program.
That's hard for most people to do.
Very hard. And but imagine men, different colors, different traditions, different cultures, able to break open themselves in vulnerability with one another. Most of these men have never had a non-manipulative, non-abusive relationship with another human being, especially another man. And yet they come to the point that they're able to do that. And excuse the word, but miracles do happen.
Bunting, mm-hmm. Hates the word warden
right.
Apparently. Jason Bunting
yeah.
said he remembers the moment when he saw that light go off in your head.
Wow.
He remembers when you changed.
Wow.
It's visible?
For some of our guys, it is.
Yeah.
I can give you an example. The first time I went there and took 45 bishops from around the world, we had standing before us the former head of the Aryan Brotherhood in all the prisons in Ohio. And a black Muslim, he said, formerly enraged. They said, we used to have each other's numbers. Now we have each other's back. We are different, but because we've learned to love ourselves, we love and care for each other. Nobody gets him without getting me first. That's transformation.
That made me look back and think. I remember when I first moved from North Central Correctional Institution to Marion,
yeah.
and I was a staff barber. And I met Jody, mm-hmm. and then I ended up working at Lifeline.
But Jody
Davis,
Davis,
which is the director.
Right.
Uh-huh. But when I met her, she was speaking Spanish. And so, Ann, I'm like, I want to learn Spanish. So she's been teaching for 30, 40 years and all of that. And she thought it was a joke. She thought I was joking. So the week later or something, I'm speaking a little bit of Spanish to her. But my point is that at that moment, I felt something different then. And I said, something strange about this place, something strange about this lady,
mm-hmm.
you know. So,
in a good way.
Yeah, so.
Jody Davis
right.
is a good
yeah.
Wonderful.
So
that led,
you're listening, Jody.
Right. I have to say that. I'm sorry. But that led to all the win-win programming that I took, which also was mediation also.
Right.
I ended up helping out to mediate also with an Aryan guy mm-hmm. and another Aryan guy.
And
as a black man, that's kind of. Strange.
Your yeah. visitors want to know that Naj is in a PhD program and that...
my master's right now,
okay,
but Dr. Salam is sounding real good to me.
I know it is.
There we go. That's right.
One other thing. We're doing a book. A book's being done on Horizon. An interviewer was in one of the prisons this week listening to the men. One of the administrators was listening in with the permission of the men, and that administrator in the system 20-some years said to the interviewer, I've never seen anything like this in all my years in corrections. This is amazing. These men can be tomorrow's leaders if they're given a chance.
Another thing that Jason Bunting mentioned was the purpose isn't only about the people who stay overnight in the prison.
Right.
It's about the people who leave every day, too.
Right.
There's that communal sense of purpose.
Yeah, that's a huge piece. At Marion, when you have people calling you by your name and not just your last name or a prison number, with those interactions, it's like people model that you're human. People
right.
tell you that you're human. I mean, like literally, like, you know, you're a person, you know,
otherwise,
you have an opinion.
You can forget.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I can remember a few people that were really instrumental. Kelly Donahue was one of them. But mm-hmm. what I want to say before we leave is the social capital is what people need once you
right.
leave prison. There's been so many people that have been helpful since my release that, you know, that's what makes it to where you have the opportunity, even getting prepared to come here and speak with you.
Right. And I want to say the three wardens who have been at Marion during this time, Christine Money,
absolutely.
Maggie Beekler, and Jason Bunning, are to die for.
Yeah.
Big
they
part
are
of
what
the
wardens
equation.
Ought to be.
Well, I want to thank Bishop Joseph Sprague for joining us today. Again, president of the Horizon Prison Initiative, thank you so much. And also Najmuddin Salam, soon to be Masters of Social
Work.
And then doctor. He's program manager for Win-Win Inc. Yeah. That's an organization that focuses on successful prison reentry. Next week, when it comes to mass incarceration, we're going to look at the victim's point of view. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.